Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 259. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with the mellow Phil Wilson.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
The jazz master, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Salsa, man. Salsa.
Salsa.
Jazz.
I looked for salsa, but I couldn't find
it. What is this jazz you speak of?
And for those that are wondering, Tim Elliott and Graham Thickens are on their spring break adventures, so they're not going to be here today.
They bailed on us.
They bailed on us. So we'll have to hold on the fort.
Yeah. Our spring break didn't last as long as their spring break. It doesn't seem right.
How did that work?
I don't know.
What's up with that?
I don't know. But, you know, I got to tell you, though, a couple of days at the beach and I'm pooped.
Yeah. It's tough to lay out there in the sun.
did you do anything for spring break, Steve?
The answer is no.
No, nor did I.
No.
Julio, how about you? You've got a small child. You could probably do a spring break thing, right?
He's not so small anymore.
Yeah, how old is he now?
He's a sophomore in high school, and he broke his leg recently, so our mobility is somewhat restricted.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he was skiing. Yeah, he's on the mend, but yeah, we just kind of stayed put.
Oh. Wow, very cool. Very cool skiing story. I had a skiing accident story. That's great. You can pick up chicks with that.
That's great.
Yeah. Somehow when I got hurt, that never helped me when I was a sophomore in high school.
And I discovered they don't do the plaster cast anymore. They have these cyborg things that you clamp onto your leg. So it's I thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, really? They don't do that? Really? Yeah. I had no idea.
Huh. Yeah. So my son looks like the Terminator or something.
No.
Well, Julio, thanks for stepping in. We wanted to just bring you on. It's always good to hear from you. I hope you are doing well. And any big doings since last we spoke?
Doings in terms of what?
Any new books on the way? Any new publications? Any new speaking engagements?
Are you buying a major daily newspaper?
Have you become an owner of a daily?
Well, they're becoming affordable, I hear.
Yeah. I've heard that too.
Yeah. Book-wise, as I mentioned to you guys a little earlier, I'm going to crank out a little iBook on the AeroPress, which is this inexpensive coffee making apparatus that has an incredible subculture built around it. It's just so interesting that I just had to write a little book about it. So I'm going to putz on that this summer.
Is your Ignite speech, Ignite presentation on the AeroPress still somewhere available online?
Oh, yeah. In fact, since I'm doing an iBook, which is multimedia rich, I'm going to throw that in there.
Nice. So, yeah, cool.
We'll make sure to get a link to that. Because, Julio, this was, it was 2 years ago, more maybe?
Yeah.
Your presentation on the AeroPress, which was, I thought, epic. Great. One of my favorite of that night's, that's for sure.
So you're really you're a hardcore user then.
Man's right. A junkie. The man is a junkie, yeah.
All right. So I got a question.
Now that time has lapsed on Mr. Stevens exiting Best Buy,
yes.
He can now start sharing his memos. I understand. So,
yeah, I can't remember if I was emailing or DMing or what with Stevens. You know, he and I sort of keep in touch. I remember what happened. He said something sort of cryptic about, you know, retail and, you know, the future of retail and something along the lines of, physical retail isn't going to die, mediocre retail is going to die or something along those lines. And so I sort of snarkily responded on Twitter, are you making a veiled reference to Best Buy? And that conversation sort of segued into a private conversation where he told me that his contractual relationship with Best Buy was about to lapse, and that would free him up to to say things that he couldn't say before, and that in fact he had this memo that he had shared with his superiors as he was heading out the door in 2012. And I thought, he'll never share that memo with me, you know. But I thought, you know, it never hurts to ask, and he did in fact agree to exclusively let me see the memo and to craft a story around it. So he gave me the memo well beforehand. I read the memo, wrote the story, interviewed him, and then I had that ready to go. his contractual relationship would lapse on, I think it was March 31st or April 1st. So my story would hit on April 1st.
Nice.
But then we all pause. It's like, we're not going to release a story on April Fool.
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's probably a good idea.
So we delayed it a day, and it came out on April 2nd.
Yeah. So, well, the gist of it is, he basically had some suggestions as to what Best Buy could do to stop their downward spiral, a lot of which had already has taken place. I don't know whether it's because of Robert's memo or what, but Hubert Joly has done a lot of the things that were covered in that memo. I looked at it and I don't necessarily, did you think there was really anything earth shattering in there that wasn't, just really solid common sense and probably good strategy for any retailer who was, struggling with, you know, being outpriced?
I didn't see anything in the memo that made me think of Moses standing up on the mount holding, two tablets, nothing of that nature. But it was an interesting thing because it was sort of a little snapshot in time. It was the memo was written at a completely different time, where at that time what he was saying would have been more impactful, because at that time Best Buy I think was struggling a little more than it is now. The Best Buy has been a little bit of a comeback story. And that's one of the things he says in his memo. People love comeback stories, so don't work towards that. And Best Buy, to a certain degree, has. In fact, Best Buy was a little annoyed that this memo got out, because they said, "Hey, you know, a lot of the stuff in this memo mm-hmm. will be done." I would agree with them. They have.
Well, in fact, I've said to a couple of people, I probably said it on this podcast, that I'm actually shopping at Best Buy again.
Right now, as we speak, you're shopping there right
not
now?
Not as we speak, no. But seriously, I mean, I went in and I was looking for a great big USB 3 flash drive. I wanted a 64 gig or maybe even a 128, because there are some 128s out now. Just stop. God. It is so hard to have a serious conversation with Phil, because he teases me.
I do. It's he's just like, you're sharing so much of it.
Okay.
You're like reading a Tom Clancy novel. You're like, you describe the backstory and the intricacies.
I know.
I love it. I just,
that's why my wife always looks at me when I start to tell a story, and she'll just say one word, Genesis, because that's our shorthand for her saying, "Steve, why do you always start at the book of Genesis?
I know.
Skip ahead to the New Testament when you're going to tell a story."
I can tell you that you can spend time with Steve, and I can guarantee you, you will never have a lack of discussion and conversation. Never. Ever. So I can guarantee you that. That's why I've always loved Steve. And, you know, from the first time I met him from coffee at a Dunn's Brothers down in Eden Prairie, you know, the one just around the corner, and we always, you know, anyway, so, I love that. But anyway, you're shopping at Best Buy again.
At Best Buy again. But I went in there and ended up buying a 1 terabyte little Seagate drive. It was $69. And I went online and afterwards, and I searched around, and just about everybody was selling it for the same price. And that's just one indication of probably a dozen different things that I've purchased there in the last month, that are all priced very aggressively. And it was never that way before, let me tell you.
Well, you know, that's the age old problem, though. That sales are up, and, you know, there's more people coming in, but margins are lower. So eventually that catches up with you, and you say you've got to make cuts somewhere else. And so it's the old adage of, you can't cut yourself, you cut your way to success. Is it a long-term strategy to be able to beat price, or is the strategy more like what's probably alluded to in Robert's memo of insanely great customer service?
Well, I think that's part of it, but, you know, job one of any retailer is getting people in the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's job one. And job two is, you better have stuff to sell them, and you better have stuff to upsell them, and you better have stuff to sell them that they may not have considered. and but job one is getting him in the store. So if you can get him in the store, then, you know, a lot of your job is already done. And then add to that the fact that, oh, by the way, don't leave if you're interested in buying that, because we'll price match. So if you go to Amazon on your phone while you're standing in the store and you see that for Seagate Drive for, you know, $68, we'll price match it. Or $59, let's say, we'll price match it. And so, yeah, then you reinforce the decision that I made to go into the store and actually buy the product, even though I was doing a humma. And so now next time I go in, I'll be more apt to buy something. Plus the fact, it's just weird. I mean, I'm walking around, poking around, and I see this Android desktop Acer model. So it's a display with and it just runs Android, and it's got a keyboard and mouse. And not that I would go out and buy a desktop Android device, but I might do that over a Chromebook because there are more apps. And so I just thought that was interesting because I started to play with it and so on, which I never would have done if I hadn't have been in the store. I mean, I would have looked at it on Amazon, for example, and went, nah, not going to bother. You know, just no interest. But since it was there and I was right there and I didn't even know this product existed, then it was worth taking a look at. And so that's the kind of thing that I think they're trying to accomplish. So,
and having some level of success. Well, Julio, you know, at the memo aside, and the, you know, the look back at Best Buy, what else is Robert up to? Is he, you know, the article alluded to a few things that he's working on in the Bay Area. Do you have any idea what those are, and is it something he's sharing? Or
yeah, he's holding that somewhat close to the vest. He did tell me some interesting tidbits of things that he's working on that I can't. He told me that in confidence. I can't really talk about it. And
is it bigger than a bread box? Is it?
But he did. Yeah, you know, he didn't show me the whole playbook.
Gotcha.
But from some of the hints he dropped, he's got some interesting things coming. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, listen, there were some big doings around the Cocoa Complex the other day after Steve Case. They did the demo thing, the Google demo stuff. We had two representatives from the Twin Cities area, Kittison and Docalytics, had done a presentation, a demo. So there's some big doings after Steve Case offered some dough up. Did you have more on that, Julio? What did you think of that situation?
I haven't been following that particular situation very closely. I understand there was some controversy about whether money was actually handed over as opposed to being offered. I'm a little fuzzy on the details. I think you guys can probably fill that in for me.
Well, I think that's the issue. Is that he did say that he would.
He's offered, sure.
Yeah, he'd offer $100,000 and the Twin Cities business. Biz Journal article sort of indicated that it was a done deal, that they were in fact taking the money. Oh, and that was not
an offer.
It was an offer. Yeah.
It was an offer. And, you know, yes, they'll have to give something up to get that money, but that's how you get money to, you know, invest it in your startup. You give up a little piece.
And that's where I got really confused, because I initially became aware of this when Kittison tweeted me about this, and the way they tweeted me, it sounded like, hey, we got a bunch of money. Here's some money we got.
Yeah.
And that's what they seemed to tell me. But then, you know, I read some of the news reports about this, and it was a completely different situation.
Oh, well, I'm sure
perplexing situation.
I'm sure both will take the money. It's just that you know, it's not a final deal.
Okay.
And who knows what strings are attached.
Yeah, nobody's going to share that information.
Well, here's what I was amazed by.
It's how it works in the startup community.
This list of the Google for Entrepreneurs demo day, you know, there were only 10 companies on it, two of them from Minneapolis, two from Chicago, one from Detroit, one from Denver, and then Durham, North Carolina had two. So it was, you know, pretty well scattered across the U.S., but I mean, to have two companies in this demo day was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I believe they were all drawn from the tech hubs that Google has set up.
Correct.
Entrepreneur Tech Hubs, which Cocoa is one. So.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was. So that's always good to hear that, you know, those guys at especially at Kittison, I see them working, you know, daily, and it's always good to see the local guys do well. So,
And Kittison has an interesting backstory. They're a complete pivot. I think right now their focus is on a marketplace for children's products. Mm-hmm. And they their genesis is a completely different thing. They were trying to they had these little stickers that you can like put on your belongings and so forth. And then if somebody scanned those stickers, it would give you information about those objects. And essentially, they wanted to take, you know, everyday objects and make them social, you know, put them online. It was a very interesting idea that very clearly did not take off. And so they completely did a complete 360 and 180, and now they're doing something completely different. So it's interesting when that happens, you know, when companies start one way and they end up being something completely different.
Well, so the concept of this, you know, Once Upon a Child, is a concept that has retail locations. And I'm surprised that they haven't done an app, you know, done something like Kittison does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Don't know.
And I would wager a small amount of money that the Kittison people might have even approached Once Upon a Child and might have been rebuffed. So.
Yeah, that could be.
Hate being rebuffed.
Yeah. Well, so this was so interesting that I ended up doing a post about it. I've spent a little quality time with Darren Klum, you know, of the liquid cooled Rochester company, and I just blew out of my brain, and some others. But when he started Cram, the whole intent was to have this device that you would load up with movies. And they mm-hmm. created this security model around the box. And so rather than stream through a Roku or an Apple TV, this relatively low bitrate HD quality, supposedly, movie, you would be able to go in and recharge this device with movies and then unlock them you download them through the internet onto the device, but they'd be full Blu-ray quality. So you'd have all the bit depth, and you know, you'd end up with significantly greater quality. Well, that didn't catch. So they did a pivot, and they've pivoted into something that leverages a lot of the technology they'd created. And what it is, the underlying security technology now, it's a cloud-based backup, but it shreds the data, and it randomizes it, and it distributes it to multiple storage locations, and then it can be reassembled based on the software that you use to back up to essentially restore the data. And it's just a fascinating model. So they got named to this 20 most promising enterprise security company list by CIO Review.
Wow.
And this is a big deal, because there are only 20 companies on here. And to make this list is not easy, because, you know, CIOs want stuff that's on here that does, in fact, have a real competitive advantage with a security model. So this is going to be something to watch, to see what Cram ends up pulling together and making available. Because there's no way. I mean, even if the NSA could gather all the data from all the different multiple points, there's no way they could reassemble it. I mean, it would be like having a pulp based shredder for documents, and then you try to reassemble the pulp into a document. Probably not going to happen. So yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Interesting name for a company.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just an interesting name for a brand, but yeah. So hearing aids, the folks over at Starkey Labs. I have a friend of mine in my neighborhood whose son graduated from Iowa State University, went to work for Starkey Labs as a programmer, and is now working on, I think he's working on this very project, to tell you this truth.
The Halo iPhone compatible hearing aid.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, there's another locally based hearing aid company that's doing the same thing. That company whose name is escaping me at the moment. I apologize. And Starkey, they're both they have both collaborated closely and for a time secretly with Apple to allow hearing aids to be iPhone controlled. You know, essentially, you know, the same way you control. A Bluetooth headset. If you're wearing a Bluetooth headset, it's paired up to the iPhone. The idea here with the latest flavor of Bluetooth is to have a link between the hearing aid and the iPhone, so you can control the audio. And that's just for starters. The iPhone also becomes control panel, so you can basically control all of the hearing aids settings. So rather than having to go into, the ear doctor guide to, have him tweak your hearing aid, you could do it right on the iPhone. It gives hearing aid users a vastly greater amount of control over their hearing device. Basically turns the hearing device into a consumer electronics audio device. For different environments, you can customize different settings for the hearing aid right on your phone, which again, in the past, you would have had to go into the audiologist to have done. You could just gives you total fine grain control over hearing aid, which is kind of mind blowing. And this was all to a large extent Apple spurred. Apple kind of pushed this and created these alliances, and it was really interesting. I had heard a little bit about that, and I had sort of made a mental note to follow up. And as Apple PR team is very, very good. And I have
imagine.
I don't know if friendship is the right word, because she and I have exchanged sharp words in the past, but I have this friendly collaboration with Janet Berrios, a PR woman at Apple, who is from the same South American nation as my wife, by the way. So they share this similar, very combative temperament, which I greatly admire. But that aside, she called me on the phone and said, "Hey, have you been following this hearing aid business?" And I had been aware of this other local hearing aid company, but I had not been aware that Starkey was working on something like this, because they were just announcing it. And so she called me and she basically gave me a little nudge, and I ended up, in very short order writing a front page story for the Pioneer Press that was super, super interesting.
Well, if I could interject, what's just stunning to me is in 6 years, by 2020, 73 million baby boomers will be retired. And the U.S. workforce, 25%. Of the U.S. workforce will be at least 55 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So are people going to be losing their hearing, need devices like this? I think so.
Yes, it's a huge market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Starkey is really, they're really doing a great job. And GN Resound is the other one, right?
Yeah, and Starkey actually came into to the Pioneer Press and that demoed this for me, and I basically I actually put one of those hearing aids in my ear and kind of played with it. It's amazing.
Just one real quickly. Something is scratching with your microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is it?
Let me reposition here.
I think it's his.
His stubble?
I think it's his bling. No, I think he's got some bling on or something.
I'm going to remove some of my gold jewelry here.
It's his earrings.
All right, you're dancing, buddy. That sounds good.
Much better. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I'm super, super impressed. This is, one of those examples of where Apple just comes up with a technology that has interesting applications, and they just kind of, they sort of take the lead and try to champion it to interesting effect. There's another example of that. I don't know if this was on your list or not, but there's another example of that with iBeacon. iBeacon is, you guys are familiar with that, right?
Yeah.
The Bluetooth technology that has the little transmitters and so forth. On Target Field opening day on Monday, the little Bluetooth LED beacon transmitters will be set up at entrances to target fields. So people that have recent model iPhones have the MLB at the ballpark app installed. In the past, when they went to ball games, they would have to sort of manually check into the app in order to use it. Now, as they come within proximity of these iBeacon transmitters, they'll get checked into the app automatically, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of cool. And then there's some other iBeacon applications with the MLB app that are sort of coming down the pike. But that's just another example of this cool little technology that has interesting applications and sort of gets a swift kick from Apple and so ends up being deployed in the real world to some interesting effect.
Well, I tell you what, that is going to be interesting in the context of what Apple is supposedly doing with all the health stuff. And you know, now Philips has come out and talked about not only are they doing a lot in the Internet of Things, but they're also going to be doing health-related Internet of Things. So we'll have to see what that is all about.
Yeah.
So upcoming minibar.
Yes. Did we all get tickets, by the way? Did we all get tickets?
Yes.
We did.
I did.
Julio, are you going to minibar this year?
I might, yeah. I usually show up as press, so I didn't get a ticket. But
And you can tell because he's got that hat with the little press tag in it. That's how you know he's
the
press.
The fedora?
The little fedora with the...
But even more importantly, as I'm sitting here right beside me here on the floor is my spittoon.
There you go.
So do you have, just out of curiosity, do you have a fedora with a little press? Because somebody's at some point in time has had to give you that as a gift, right? Do you have one of them?
You know, nobody has. And that is one of the things that I'm not kidding here. I have literally yearned to own. I want to be indie, first of all. I want my fedora to look like Indiana Jones. But then I want the little card in there. So I want to be Indiana Jones star reporter.
There you go.
Yes.
Armed with his iPad rather than a whip.
Yes.
Exactly. I think Steve was getting at the story about the little piranha pool, which they're putting together at Minibar, which is like the Shark Tank series that's on. Do you guys watch Shark Tank?
Never.
I don't watch it religiously, but I did catch the episodes where this very, very charismatic Twin Cities rabbi was on. I wrote a couple of stories about him. He came up with this little attachment. You clip it on to the iPad along the edge where the speakers are. And it sort of cups. And,
oh yeah, sure, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so he was on chart. The guy's just a complete hoot. But he was on. on Shark Tank, and he actually derived some benefit from that experience. So yeah, I watched those episodes.
Which I thought was that was a great little, simple fix to the iPad at the time to bring that everything forward. I got a kick out of that piece. So anyway, I got a question for you about this, though. You know, I was reading the article on it, and our friend Catherine Grayson over at BizJournal put together a piece on it as well. And I was reading that companies comply to give a 15-minute pitch to a group of Minnesota angel investors. Yet down the page, it says that businesses that are seeking to participate have to have something built, and they have to have customers using it. That's not angel funding, is it?
Investing. Sure.
That's not angel funding.
No, but you know what, though? I mean, just like franchise organizations, you know, like there's one in Chicago that does nothing but FranCorp that says just sets up franchises, is they won't even talk to you unless you already have the concept up and running and have customers. They won't even... You can come in with the greatest idea in the world and the greatest business plan. They won't even talk to you.
But that's not angel funding, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Isn't angel funding kind of like the, we're going to bet on the come sort of thing rather than we're going to invest in your company, quote unquote?
I think it depends. I think money is pretty tight right now. for funding, and if people want to be relatively assured. I think it's more so here in this market than elsewhere, because mm-hmm. I think if we were in the Bay Area, somebody'd be like, you need $500,000 here. You know, if it's a great idea and you're the right team, they'll bet on the team rather than
the idea. Do you have any names in particular on that one, Steve, that would say, yeah, here?
Well, I'll get back to you. I'll send you a private
email. Would you
let
me know? Yeah, that'd be great. Sure. Thank you. those guys that would say, yeah, sure, here. Yeah, I love those guys.
I know.
Okay.
So Tim didn't go to the overnight website challenge. Have you guys heard much about what happened? And
you know, a company that I work with doing some freelance work on, Ampers, one of their stations was selected KFAI, which is a local community station here in Minneapolis. So, I don't think they haven't married the teams together yet. The teams to the at least that they've announced publicly, have they? Did you hear? Have they put the teams together with the nonprofits yet? They usually do that kind of last minute, I believe.
So. Yeah, because the actual build weekend is the 12th and 13th, right?
Right.
And
same weekend as Minibar. So.
Right. Which is causing a lot of concern among people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying, I want to go to Minibar.
Yeah.
So.
But that's kind of exciting. You know, any company, especially a nonprofit that can benefit from a new website, I think it's great. I just hope that, you know, my big thing is I would really love to see those websites go live at the end of the 24 hours, not sometime in the future.
True.
I'd really like to see them go live. I don't know. Julio, what do you feel about that?
It's a little tough to pull off,
though. Yeah, I know, but isn't that what makes it the challenge? That you can get the site from zero to 100? And really, a website's nothing until it's online, until it's actually on the web, right?
Sure, well, but if you're doing the website for a company, that company is going to be very, very leery about having what essentially is a half baked product created by sleep deprived people in a short period of time be their official website. So
that's the thing. I don't think it can be half baked. Then you haven't met the challenge. It has to be baked and it has to be online. That I know that's me picking nits, but that's always been the thing to me is like I don't think you qualify or you can win the challenge unless that sucker's on the web.
Live. Well, and what's happening a lot is the teams are essentially developing the guts of a site because they find out in advance who their nonprofit is, right?
No, they don't know until the night before.
Okay, but they have typically will have the guts of a theme done, and they'll have the framework. You know, if they're using a framework, they'll have that. So they'll do the whole install and they'll have it ready.
No,
Nope. They're not doing any of that.
Nope.
That's
not what we did, well, at least the year that I was there. We started from scratch.
Okay. Well.
So, but then again, I don't know if some others are doing it differently, but yeah, we started from scratch. And Tim may have learned and the team may have picked up on some things, you know, moving forward that I wasn't, because, you know, they threw me out. But anyway, not really. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Anyway. So. It's always a great event. And this year they're doing them. Are they doing them simultaneously throughout the country, Kansas City, Chicago, and the Twin Cities? I'm not sure they are, but I think they are, because this is all about, Nerdery Overnight Website Challenge. So anyway, it's across all of their offices. So.
Yeah. Well, so this article in the Strib about the Minneapolis couple who rule dog cuteness on Instagram. They started a Dogs of Instagram site. And I just, it's, I can see that it's pretty interesting that, you know, they've got a nice base of people, you know, that are using it and so forth, but it's like, is this really worth a whole article?
Well, I mean, it sounds like they're making money. I don't know how much money. I'm not sure what the business model is. Do you know, Julio, how does somebody make money on Instagram?
I don't know the details, but this is similar to some of these Twitter accounts like Earth Pictures, I think it's called, and Cute. And it's, there are a whole bunch of historical picture Twitter accounts and Earth Picture Twitter accounts and Cute Animal Twitter accounts. And forgive me, I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but in certain cases, a lot of these sites are controlled by one or two individuals who have just partnered up and just gone crazy, and they are making money. You don't make money right on the Twitter account, but they do have a business model, and they seem to be raking in the dough. So there's a precedent for this. I'm not sure exactly how that would work on Instagram specifically, yeah. But yeah.
So you're scratching again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you're supposed to shave before the podcast.
Ashley, who is part of the team that's putting this together, you know, her and her boyfriend. Ashley's one of the hosts at Coco Downtown. So.
Oh, really? Ashley Pagullo.
Yeah, we see her almost every day.
Interesting. Well, you should ask her.
I know. I will.
Say, hey, what's up?
I found out this week that she was, you know, part of this site, but or part of this account. But I didn't realize that it was a business venture. So I thought it was just kind of something they were doing for fun. Once again, you know, people that actually know how to, you know, make money with their ideas. God love them. Right. I didn't do that with Comic Twit. So you know, what are you gonna do?
Yep. So one of the things that I keep coming to over and over and over again, because I do a lot of reading online.
And yes, you do.
If it's on the internet, it's true, right?
Oh, sure.
Right, Julio?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So tell us about your article. If it's on the internet, it must be true, right?
Yeah, well, it's kind of an annual thing that I do. I kind of round up the most interesting April Fool's pranks. You know, there are tons of tech world ones online from, you know, all over. And in Minnesota, you know, there usually are, you know, some interesting examples of that. And Space 150, you guys know the Space 150 guys?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, they usually throw it out of the park on this thing. They always have really, really good pranks. This year they did a prank where they claimed to have come up with a augmented reality app for Google Glass that would allow people wearing Google Glass, if they looked up at the moon, they would see advertising emblazoned on, you know, on the full moon, which is kind of fun, kind of funny. Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Caribou claimed to have invented, you know, clear coffee that would not stain if you spilled it on your pants. You know, all kinds of you know, fun little stuff like that. I usually scramble on April 1st and pull all of these things together, you know, into a story that invariably, you know, the invariably ends up on page one, because it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah.
It's fun.
My favorite one was Brainerd Lake Chamber of Commerce said that, you know, we're sick of winter. So we're going to do this ice logging thing. We're going to log all the ice on the lake, you know, split it up into logs. And then, you know, round up one of the descendants of Babe the Blue Ox and have that Babe the Blue Ox descendant sort of drag the ice logs off the lake. And presto, we have no more lake ice. So I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, and I'd buy that as reality.
Yeah, sure. It's very blue.
Well, I got to tell you,
it's funny, you know, the April Fool's, you know, was always that one thing that you prank people on, you know, and it's just, you know, it's just a perfect holiday for the web. It's just, it's like the holiday for the web.
Well, I personally just really get weary of it.
I know.
I mean, it's just like, I mean, come on, seriously?
Well, you wonder, you know, here's something that's grown from a novelty into, you know, a huge force in our society, and, you know, doesn't help that the credibility is rocked every at least once a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, but the Caribou Clear Coffee, yeah, for it's just believable enough that some people are going to fall for it. And that's the key. You have to come up with a prank that is you know, fairly outrageous and absurd, but not so much so that some people are going to actually buy it. So, a descendant of Babe the Blue Ox is kind of ridiculous. Right, yeah. Nobody's going to believe that. But Clear Coffee, that could happen.
Yeah,
it could happen.
It's true. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, Julio, I don't know if this happened pre I broke my leg or after. But your son is involved in something called what? Minute Bots?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, that's the name of his team. The Central High School and other high schools, they all field, robotics teams they come up with these robots. There are certain rules that all the robots have to follow. They come up with these robots. And this year, the robots have certain things that they need to do. They need to be able to manipulate these big exercise balls. They need to be able to pass the balls from robot to robot in teams. They need to be able to either roll the exercise balls through low targets or toss them through high targets. So they have these tasks that they need to do. And they have these competitions. So they're over at Williams Arena last weekend. There were dozens of these teams, and you see these robots of all shapes. You know, they all have to follow certain specs, but they all look and work completely different. So you see all these robots that all look completely different, sort of scuttling around with these balls, and it just kind of blows your mind. My sons at Central High School, their MinuteBots robotics team didn't exist 2 years ago. It's a brand new team, Central High School, inner city high school, you know, very limited resources, going up against teams that have been doing this for a long time, have a lot more experience and resources. And my son's MinuteBots team placed second in this tournament, which basically blew everybody's mind, that nobody saw this coming. And having placed second qualified them for the upcoming late April national tournament in St. Louis. So they're headed for St. Louis if they can raise the money, because, again, nobody saw this coming. So there was nothing in the budget that would allow for this expensive trip. And so now the kids and their teachers are frantically crowdfunding this thing to see if they. Yeah,
I'm looking at the GoFundMe site. I'll put a link in the show notes there. $2,511 on their way to a goal of $15,000. How much time do they have?
I think there's a deadline on there. Although GoFundMe, it works doesn't work as a Kickstarter. Right? Basically, if money comes in, you have the money.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. But they need to hit that $15,000 mark to A, finance the trip, and B, set aside a little money so that there's actually a team next year. Because, without a certain amount of money set aside, there literally will not be a team next year. So,
okay. So
they're scrambling. And, you know, the kids were walking up and down Grand Avenue trying to get businesses to donate and so forth. Yeah. So I'm trying to get the word out about this, because it's a just little high tech Rocky story, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I see your son there in the second row.
Yeah. And he's there with his cyborg leg splint, because he broke his leg skiing and so forth.
His cyborg leg splint.
I can't see it, but okay.
Yeah, in fact, I think he was swapping components from the leg splint to the robot and back and forth. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, they're super excited about this, but also, you know, just a little stressed out, because they do really need to raise money for this to happen. So
yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
And my son as I write in a blog post that we can also put in the show notes, he has this history of one-upping the old man. When I was a kid, I devoured science fiction novels with robots and androids in them, and now here my son is actually building them. It's holy cow.
Yeah. Now you're sleeping with one eye open, aren't you?
Hell yeah.
Oh God.
Well, yeah. Listen. So if somebody's listening to this, minutebots.org, that's minutebots.org. That'll take you right to the crowdfunding site.
There you go.
Cool.
Help him out. Help a kid out. Big doings for you on the national front that I know this impacts you a great deal, and you did a piece on it that the Office for iPad suite is now available. And so what did you think about it, Mr. iPad, Mr. iPad for Business?
Mr. Scratchy still.
Mr. Writing on
Oh, no, I'm really sorry. I don't know what's going on.
Maybe it's your headset.
Oh, I know what it is. I keep reaching out to scratch my belly. That's what it is.
Jeez. Well, at least you're not like Graham, who eats cereal sometimes, and you can hear him crunching. He goes, "Oh, sorry, I thought I was muting."
Or microwaves meals, or all sorts of things.
Anyway, go ahead.
I apologize. I'm gonna scrutinize my setup here because I don't know why that scratching is happening.
That's okay.
But it's interesting. Office is interesting because I ditched Office long time ago. In fact, for to research this story, I actually fired up Office for the Mac for the first time in 5 years. And it's very interesting because the Office for the iPad they came up with is very, very, very good. They basically took the complexity of the desktop applications, synthesize it down to tablet apps that are very touch friendly, very powerful, very capable, but sort of do away with a lot of the cruft that isn't really needed. Very aesthetically, very elegant. Even the icons are fantastic. And so a lot of people said Microsoft was very late to the game. They doubted, whether Microsoft would come up with anything that was any good, and Microsoft just hit it out of the park. I mean, these are I did an in-depth review of Office for iPad for the Tidbit site. I think that's in the show notes. And there are some bizarre things, like you can't print, and there's some weird things going on. You can't embed video in a PowerPoint presentation, which is strange since you can do that with Keynote. But generally, they came up with this fantastic, top-notch little product. The only problem is to get the most use out of it, you do need an Office 365 subscription. You can use the apps to a certain extent. You can
they're read only though.
Yeah, you can read files. Yeah. You can present. You can open files, but you can't save or edit. So you do need Office 365, but heck, at companies that already have Office 365 seats, this fits right in because that Office 365 subscription that you already have works just fine with the iPad. And this is really important because, and I wrote a whole book about this, there are a lot of productivity apps for tablets like the iPad, and a lot of them are pretty good, but they're not great. They're not like really awesome great. And that's because they're not really Office. I'm making air quotes here. They're not really Office. Now we do have Office, and it is pretty darn great.
Well, so one of the things that you said right at the bottom of your article for Tidbits, and there'll be a link in the show notes, is an editor that you trust talked about absolutely nothing compares to Office and power and features and all-in-one easy-to-buy package, especially Excel. Normal folks can get by with Google Docs and Sheets, but empires are built on Excel. Now, here's the kicker with that. I was sitting with a controller who was had in his briefcase his laptop, his iPad, which he loved, and also a Microsoft tablet. And I asked him why. Why in the world would you carry two tablets? And he said, well, I just use the Surface, or that's what it's called, right? I can't even remember. But he said the reason that I use it is because I can't do things like pivot tables and Visual Basic using the iPad. Mm-hmm. And he ends up with almost 100% compatibility with just about everything that he could use running on the Microsoft tablet. And he's got the Pro model, of course. And so I thought that was interesting because even though, an Office 365 subscription would give you the ability to read and write, I don't know about the limitations on some of that stuff. you know, like pivot tables and specifically, but
yeah, there are certain power features like pivot tables that are still not supported on the iPad. Yeah. So you still have that problem. But it's interesting that you mentioned Surface tablets, because I did another fairly extensive story about Surface for Tidbits. And one of the points I made is, how is it even remotely possible that Microsoft has not released touch-friendly Office apps for Windows 8 for the start screen? I mean, it blows my mind. When the iPad came out, Apple had iWork apps ready to go right then. And I don't know how long it's been since Surface has been out. It's coming up on 2 years. Still no touch-friendly Office. They demonstrated a crude version of Touch PowerPoint at the Build conference this past week. And they made very clear, you know, this is not the final UI. We're not even going to show you Word or PowerPoint or Excel. And it's going to be a while yet, kids. And every time I think about this, I just get a migraine, because it just blows my mind. How is it possible that Microsoft doesn't have Office, touch-friendly Office for Surface? And is that one of the reasons that Surface hasn't done all that well? Because using the desktop variant of Office with touch is just, it's a nightmare. And I love the point I made in that article is I made an effort to revisit Surface and sort of give it another try, and ended up falling in love with it. So the Surface tablets are great, but the software part just isn't there. And this is Microsoft's responsibility, and they completely dropped the ball on that. And this is all the more egregious now that Office for iPad is out in it. It's mind blowing. I just can't believe it.
Wow. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what the uptake is on it and how it goes. And
it's doing very well. And apparently the download numbers on Office for iPad are incredible. So the old argument that Microsoft is late to the game may turn out not to be true, because there seems to be a lot of pent up demand for this product.
Well, what will matter though, of course, is conversions.
Sure.
How many free downloads convert to paying Office 365 apps? But
and Microsoft has not released numbers along those lines, I believe. Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, I was really blown away with not the fact that it was an interesting device, but that there's yet another TV set-top box now from Amazon, the $99 Fire. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I don't know about you guys, but I looked at it and went, well, there's really, other than Amazon Prime streaming, there's really nothing compelling about the device itself. I mean, I can get everything on the Apple TV. I know that at the end of the day, Amazon wants to be in the game, but what do you think their primary motivation is for coming out? I mean, just to control access to what they deliver?
That's a very, you make a very interesting point. And I went through that very thought exercise not long ago with the Kindle Fire tablets. My thinking on the Kindle Fire tablets was, you know, who the heck cares? It's nice hardware, but you know, what's really the point of this? And I had this epiphany because I signed up for 30-day free tryout of Amazon Prime, which gives you all this unlimited streaming and so forth.
Yep.
And so suddenly, as an Amazon Prime user, I went and picked up this Kindle Fire tablet that I hadn't used in a while, and I picked it up again, and I was looking at it with completely new eyes, and it suddenly dawned on me, nobody really cares about these products unless you're one of the many people that has invested in Amazon content, you know, movies, TV shows, or your Prime subscriber. If you live within that Amazon ecosystem, you will care very deeply about these products. If you're not in the ecosystem, you're going to say, who the hell cares?
Yeah.
And as somebody who was in that deeply into the Amazon ecosystem for a time, it suddenly dawned on me, yeah, there is a market for these products, and that Fire TV set-top box fits, you know, squarely into that category. Like I can plug it in, and bam, I have access to all those Breaking Bad episodes that I bought on on Amazon. It's the same. It's the same business model with the Apple TV. If you're invested in the Apple ecosystem, you have a lot of, you bought a lot of content on the iTunes Store and so forth. The Apple TV matters greatly to you. If you're not invested in the Apple ecosystem, who the hell cares? So I guess that's the answer to your question.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that at the end of the day, in my view, the one thing that's going to just blow open this market or make it stumble and grope its way toward the future is whether or not the Supreme Court decision goes in favor of Aereo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And for those that are listening, Aereo is, and I'll put a link in the show notes, Aereo is essentially TV antennas that are internet-based. So if your area is covered and you're going to get the stuff free over the air anyway, you can instead sign up for Aereo and then stream the video. And so this could be potentially a major cord-cutting product and service to get you off cable TV if that's your desire, or the dish, or the DirecTV.
Yeah, and their key argument, which I believe you glossed over, is the Aereo has at undisclosed locations in the cities where they have service, they have these farms of miniature antennas. So the antennas are very tiny, but they have literally gazillions of them at these locations. And they assign one of these antennas to each customer. And so the argument goes, TV industrial complex, we're just renting antennas to our customers. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And that legal argument is going to be put to the test.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, because, you know, it's a slippery slope as far as, you know, the retransmission or the rebroadcast or the sharing of copyrighted things like, you know, programming and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
And Barry Diller, who's the money behind Aereo, he said very bluntly, if we lose in court, it's curtains, kids.
Yeah.
Not in those words, of course. And it's one of these things you just don't know how it's going to go. But if Aereo loses, there's going to be, like on Star Wars, you know, thousands of voices crying out
in the Force.
Because Aereo has a lot of fans. And in fact, their roadmap includes the Twin Cities. They were supposed to have debuted in the Twin Cities late last year. So they're right behind schedule. But Twin Cities is on their roadmap. And I swear to God, on a regular basis, I keep getting emails and tweets and things from people saying, you know, whatever happened to Aereo? Do you know anything about why Aereo hasn't launched in the Twin Cities? And I keep asking Aereo, and they never really tell me anything substantive. So
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it holds some nice promise, because we went out and purchased a HD antenna. And I thought I would just try it. Again, this is at Best Buy, and it's, I don't know, it was like $88. And because my daughter said, hey, what happened to my TV channels? Because she streams through her MacBook to her TV downstairs in our lower level. And she never watches live broadcast TV, but she wanted to watch, you know, the Oscars and stuff like that. And so I went over and I bought this antenna, came home and just thought, you know what, I'll just give it a try. And the quality is so phenomenal to pull in local channels.
People make that discovery all the time. They're just blown away because it's uncompressed video.
It's beautiful. And, I mean, here we are on the lower level of the house, and we sit in a little bit of a bowl here in our area of Eden Prairie in between two lakes. And so, you know, the AT&T and Verizon mobile connections are always a little sketchy because the signals aren't that strong here because we're in this little bowl. And so I figured, well, maybe the signals aren't going to be that great either, and they were perfect.
Which antenna did you get, just out of curiosity?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I'm sorry. I can't remember.
Was it one of those indoor sort of flat hang-on-the-wall kind of deals?
Yes, that's precisely what it is.
Was it the Leaf?
You know, I'm just not sure. I can't remember.
Because I ask out of curiosity because the Leaf has sort of been the go-to product in that category. But then I forget the name, but I'll put it in the show notes. There's now a competitor. They just sent me a review unit, and I have a Leaf, and I'm going to put it up against this thing and hook the antenna right up to my iMac here in my home office and see how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those products, they're a little niche, but they do have a fairly loyal following.
Well, and it just works so well.
And yeah. Steve is that loyal following, trust me.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's a gadget, he's going to get it. I always want to go and go through his closets because I know that there's stuff that has sort of been relegated to the, I grow tired of this little gadget, or I've got something new in its place. I think you could probably cull a lot of stuff out of Steve's house.
So. Well, you know what's fascinating to me? And I don't know if you guys have experienced this at all, but it used to be that I would go through magazines like Mac User or Mac World or something. I'd look at every single ad. This was back in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I would go to stores like CompUSA and other places and go through the shrink-wrapped aisles of software. And then I would go to now fast forward.
Would you caress the boxes or?
No, but I would look at and see what was available.
I actually have spent hours with Steve at Micro Center and it's quite exciting. It really is.
But okay. So here's the punchline. The punchline is the magazine thing. Of course I never do anymore. The shrink wrap software business is gone. And now today I realize that even when I have just a little twinge of, hey, it'd be kind of fun to just walk around Best Buy and look around or go to Micro Center and just walk around, I realize I have everything I need. Not only do I have everything I need, but most of the stuff that I find really interesting and fascinating are internet-centric applications or open source software. You know, there's just so much out there.
Time to go back to hardware stores, dude.
That's true.
Because, you know, mowers, snow blowers, hand tools. Yeah, it's where it's at now.
Well, actually, now that Home Depot and Lowe's are merchandising Internet of Things products.
They are, yeah.
I've been trolling those aisles and looking at
stuff.
There
you
go. Yeah.
There you go.
So yeah. Kind of cool.
Well, listen, we've covered quite a bit of ground today, but Julio, thanks for stepping in. Absolutely. And joining us this week. It's always good to hear you.
Always a pleasure, yeah.
And we got anything new on the upcoming events calendar, Steve?
Not really. We've got a social media breakfast coming up that we haven't talked too much about. 8 golden rules for surefire success with Facebook ads.
Yep, look for the link on that. It's actually on a Monday, I believe, too. So
okay. And then there are a couple of education events, EduCelerate, which is happening on the 16th, and then Startup Weekend for Education is on May 2nd.
So check it out. And yeah. I'm sure there'll be more things that'll pop up in the next week, and we'll talk about them next week on
the Minovate Gang podcast. Take care.
Thanks, kids.
See you guys.